Remus, twins, but not equals. For while Romulus enjoyed a regular night and day, Remus was placed too close to the sun. Half of the planet baked constantly, a sere, unlivable desert. Half remained in constant night. And on that half, the population dwelled, and over time had evolved into hideous, light-blinded creatures. The Remans had already proven themselves inferior by living for centuries as slaves under Romulan rule. Hiron would not see the great empire plunged into night. Tallek failed to restrain himself. "It's already too late to go back, Praetor. We must move forward together. And when Shinzon's forces join ours, not even the Federation will be able to stand in our way." Hiron gripped the armrests of his chair, feigning indignation.
"Enough. The decision has been made. The Senate has considered Shinzon's proposal and rejected it. He and his followers will be met with all deliberate force and sent back to that black rock they came from. Do I make myself clear?"
The young Commander Tallek stood silently defiant, then turned and left the chamber fuming. Hiron waited for the subtle whispering of bodies turning in their chairs, and the murmurs of senators commenting to their fellows to die down before he spoke again. This time he addressed Tron, a Romulan male who had been in the Senate long before Hiron danced in his mother's womb.
"Now, Senator, you were speaking of a trade affiliation with Sellers II?"
Old Tron rose and nodded.
"Yes, Praetor. The Trade Committee has concluded that an agreement is in the best interests of the Empire. We recommend dispatching a diplomatic mission to open negotiations."
At the word negotiations, Senator Talora grunted. Hiron turned his full attention to her. Quite young and handsome, she had black hair with glints of blue, fierce upward-arching brows above black eyes, and an intangible aura of coiled passion. She had risen to the position of senator at an extraordinarily early age out of determination and intelligence. Her politics were marked by the skepticism of youth. The Celestian system was currently at the Empire's mercy and was hardly in a position to truly bargain. Hiron looked at her sternly.
"Senator Talora, you disagree with the motion?"
"No, sir. I would say negotiation is to be advised. I support all diplomatic overtures. But if you will excuse me, Praetor, I have an appointment with the Tholian ambassador."
Hiron knew her latter statement to be true, so he nodded, dismissing her. She rose and quickly exited the chamber. Before he glanced away, Hiron noted that she left behind a small silver box, intricately engraved, a gift, no doubt, from a political admirer hoping for a liaison. Then, for duty's sake, he forced himself to continue the session.
"I call for a vote on the motion to open trade negotiations with Sellers II."
As he spoke, he became aware that the silver box was moving, its top panels folding out, opening like a flower to the sun. From its center, a double helix of pure swirling energy grew slowly, and when it had reached full height, a pulse of bright green light began to climb up the helix. In the first instant, its beauty convinced Hiron that it was a piece of artwork inadvertently activated. In the next, his politician's brain convinced him that Talora's loyalty to the Empire was shakier and her thirst for power greater than he had allowed himself to imagine. She had not left this gift behind unintentionally. It had been meant specifically for him, and it had come from Shinzon. When the pulse of energy reached the top of the helix, a beam of green light shot straight up to the high domed ceiling, then cascaded down like a waterfall, like a glowing emerald mist enshrouding the entire chamber and its inhabitants. A few of the senators gasped in surprise, but all soon fell into an awed silence. It was really quite beautiful, Hiron decided. Had death been this beautiful for his wife, Tishara? Death by disruptor was supposedly quite painful, but had there been an instant for her like this one, when her entire being was absorbed by radiance as each cell was lit up from within. The glow evaporated suddenly. Just as suddenly, Hiren contemplated the great bird of prey on the wall and the dark planet, Remus, in its grip. Outside, a red sunset had just given way to night, and he realized the irony Shinzon intended. The Empire, indeed, was being plunged into Riemann darkness. He turned to a guard.
Alert security!
But he knew it was already too late. The flesh of his tongue began to melt away. And as he watched the yellow-green flesh dissolve from the guard's face, giving way to muscle and blood beneath, he saw his own countenance mirrored. The dissolution of cells was excruciating, beyond bearing, and he could not have said whether the short-lived screams that sounded in his ears were his own or those of others around him. He only knew this, that Tashara had experienced both, the beauty and the agony of dying. The last bit of light Hiren saw with his liquefying eyes was the shimmer of a transporter beam as the silver box, the weapon, was removed from the chamber. And then there was nothing but darkness. Darkness and stillness. And the silence of eternal Riemann night. Worlds away, on the planet Earth, in the area known as Alaska, Captain Jean-Luc Picard rose from the table at which he sat, and for a moment gazed beyond the people gathered before him at his magnificent surroundings, the Denali mountain range snow-capped against a blue sky. Picard drew in a breath of cold, pristine oxygen tinged with evergreen. He nodded to the officers at the bride and groom's table with him. To his right sat Beverly. To his left, Will Riker and Deanna Troi, flanked by Geordi, Data, and Worf. In front of the large central table were dozens of smaller ones occupied by other crewmates and friends. The natural beauty only added to the poignancy of the moment. To gather himself, Picard concentrated on the discomfort generated by his white dress jacket. The white tunic beneath fitted tightly at the neck and kept his expression resolute, even stern. He addressed the officers at the table.
Duty. A starship captain's life is filled with solemn duty. I have commanded men in battle. I have negotiated peace treaties between implacable enemies. I have represented the Federation in first contact with 27 alien species. But none of this compares to my solemn duty as best man.
From their center seats at the table, Will and Deanna laughed along with the rest of the guests, all except Data, who watched the ritual with avid curiosity. Picard continued to feign sternness, though his mood was a mixture of joy and melancholy.
Now, I know that on an occasion such as this, it is expected that I be gracious and fulsome with praise on the wonders of this blessed union. But have you two considered what you're doing to me? Of course you're happy, but what about my needs? This is all a damned inconvenience. While you're happily settling in on the Titan, I'll have to train my new first officer. You all know him. He's a steely sort of fellow who knows every word of every paragraph of every regulation by heart. A stern martinet who will never, ever allow me to go on away missions.
He glanced at the golden-faced android, Data, who looked up at him with those peculiarly guileless eyes. That is the regulation, sir. Starfleet Code, Section 12, Paragraph 4.
Data.
Sir?
Shut up. Then there's the matter of my new counselor. No doubt they'll assign me some soft-spoken, willowy thing who'll probe into my darkest psyche as she nods her head and coos sympathetically. Isn't that right, Deanna?
Beverly, who had served as matron of honor, leaned toward Deanna laughingly as Picard continued.
I noticed Dr. Crusher laughing along with the rest of you. As most of you know, the doctor will also soon be leaving the Enterprise to assume command of Starfleet Medical. Again, I'm forced to ask, Beverly, have you considered what you're doing to me? I'll probably get some old battle axe of a doctor who'll tell me to eat my vegetables and put me on report if I don't show up for my physical on time.
It'll serve you right, Jean-Luc.
Picard sighed and regarded Will and Deanna again.
Really, it's not too late to reconsider.
And when they both, grinning, shook their heads, he added,
No. Very well, then.
At last, he raised his glass and smiled affectionately at the two.
Will Riker, you have been my trusted right arm for 15 years. You have helped me keep my course true and steady.
He paused to gaze at the bride.
Deanna Troi, you have been my conscience and guide. You have helped me to recognize the best parts of myself. You both are my family. And in proper maritime tradition, I wish you clear horizons. My friends, make it so.
Picard and the rest of those gathered upended their glasses. As the band began to play and the guests mingled, Picard failed to see how his life would ever be the same. Beverly Crusher appeared before him, older than on the day they first met, something less of a mystery, but certainly no less beautiful. She picked up on his feelings at once. Sort of like losing a son and gaining an empath, isn't it? Picard grimaced sourly at her.
You're being a big help.
She put a hand lightly on his arm. If you start tearing up, I promise to beam you out. Level 1 medical emergency. Nearby, engineer Geordi LaForge sat at the bar nursing a glass of synthahol while talking with Guinan.
I still can't believe he finally popped the question.
Ever serene, Guinan leaned forward to prop her elbows against the bar.
What makes you so sure he popped the question?
Geordi set down his flute and raised his eyebrows.
Counselor Troi? You gotta be kidding.
Guinan's mouth curved upward in the small smile that was not quite a smile. You have to keep an eye on us quiet, soulful types. Her answer gave Geordi a thought that made him grin.
You ever think about getting married again?
Guinan looked past him at the Alaskan skyline.
No, 23 was my limit.
Geordi barely snickered, then picked up his glass. Suddenly, the Klingon Worf sat heavily on the stool beside him.
Oh, Romulan ale should be illegal.
He was referring to Riker's bachelor party held the night before. The Klingon had been less than circumspect in his imbibing. Geordi dared not smile, but he did allow himself a comment. It is.
Oh, then it should be more illegal.
And Worf's head struck the table.
Oh.
Meanwhile, Picard and Crusher had made their way to Will Riker and Deanna Troi. Troi smiled warmly at Picard.
It was a lovely toast, and you needn't worry. I'll brief your new counselor on everything she needs to know.
The hell you will. You already know too much about me. Now you promise there are no speeches during the ceremony on Beta Z.
Will and Deanna shared a bemused look. Then Riker turned to Picard and failed entirely to hide the impishness in his eyes. No speeches. No clothes, either. Picard gave him a sharp look. Apparently he'd assumed that non-Betazoid guests were exempt from this traditional marital ritual. But his former second-in-command wasn't joking. Before Picard could come up with a witty reply, the band stopped playing. At the sound of Data's voice, all turned to face the bandstand.
Ladies and gentlemen and invited transgendered species, in my study of Terran and Betazoid conjugal rites, I have discovered it is traditional to present the happy couple with a gift. Given Commander Riker's affection for archaic musical forms, I have elected to present the following as my gift in honor of their conjugation. Never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, My, how they've...